Hi, everyone. Welcome. How's everyone's morning going so far? Yeah, feeling empowered already? Awesome. So we have an amazing lineup of speakers for this panel that are just going to make you feel that much more inspired and empowered. As I was preparing to lead this panel, I was just blown away by all that they've accomplished and all the wisdom they have to impart on you and on me. So before we get going, just a little bit about myself and what brings me to have the conversation that we're about to have on this panel. My name is Stephanie Kaplan-Lewis, and I'm the co-founder, CEO, and editor-in-chief of Her Campus Media. Her Campus is the leading website for college women, and it's a company that I started when I was a college woman myself 8 years ago during my undergrad at Harvard. And the topic of this panel today is about kind of taking the lesser known path, thinking differently, going off and doing something that maybe isn't what everyone else is doing. And while you might think, oh, Harvard, entrepreneurship, that's the common path, in fact, during college, what it felt like was that so many of our peers were pursuing much more traditional avenues, going into business or law or finance or medicine. And while we were pursuing entrepreneurship, it was about something for women, something that some people thought was kind of light and fluffy, more lifestyle-y. You know, it wasn't serious, like going to med school or going to law school or going into investment banking. But it was something that we had a passion for and that we saw a need for as college women ourselves, who looked out and saw that there were all of these aspiring female journalists who were looking for a platform to get clips and get experience while they were still in college that was an alternative to the school newspaper, where they could have their work published and get visibility on a national stage and get experience in more lifestyle kind of writing that might differ from what you would write for the school paper. So we had no experience in business. I was a psychology major. My two co-founders were a history and science major and an arts major. We had no work experience because we were still in college, and we hadn't raised any money. But we had an idea, and we were passionate about it, and we wanted to pursue it. And so when it came time to graduate, we all had to make that decision of which path do we take? Do we move forward full time with trying to run our business and really take it to new heights? We had launched it while we were still students and we're kind of doing it on the side. And we all had decisions to make there. I had been accepted to Harvard Business School and had to say, okay, am I going to go to Harvard Business School or go and do this startup that who knows what might happen? One of my co-founders had a corporate marketing job she was deciding about, and my third co-founder, who was a year younger, was actually still a student at Harvard and was going to need to drop out to be able to pursue our company along with us. So as you might imagine, since I'm standing here in the role that I'm in, we all made those decisions. I didn't go to business school. My co-founder, Windsor, didn't take her corporate marketing job, and my co-founder, Annie, took a leave of absence from Harvard to go all in with us. And now, 8 years later, we have never looked back and are loving running our company and having taken the path that we did, even though it was kind of the road less traveled, if you will. So that's just a bit about me and where I'm coming from and all of this, but these women have accomplished so much and have so much to share with you, and I'm excited to be welcoming them, moderating a discussion. I'll have some questions for them, and then at the end we'll have time for questions from all of you. So be thinking as they're talking about the questions that you want to ask them when we get to that part of the program. Without further ado, let's just give a quick round of applause to our speakers here to welcome them first. Thank you, Stephanie. Fantastic. So before we dive into the questions, I'd love for you to each just briefly introduce yourself, your name, what you do, you know, quick background before we really delve deeper.
Okay, sure. Let me start.
Go for it.
Okay. Hi, everyone. Good morning. My name is Becky O'Loughlin. I work for QVC, which is here outside of Philadelphia. So if you're from this area, you may know of us. I've been with QVC for 13 years. I live in this area now. I have three children. I have a dog, husband that keeps us all sane and together, and I'm super excited to be here with you all today.
Thank you. Hi, guys. Thank you so much for coming today. I'm really excited to be here. My name's Robin Moreno. I am the co-president and editorial director of Latina Media Ventures. We have Latina Magazine, which has been around for over two decades. We also have Latina.com, and a food property called thelatinkitchen.com. In addition, I have two kids. I've done a variety of things. I've actually been on QVC, selling Latina cookware. When I was 8 months pregnant, I've written a few books. I was nominated for an Emmy. So I haven't many times in my life taken the road less traveled, and I'm excited to share that with y'all today.
Good morning. My name is Tracy Welson-Rossman, and you sort of get a twofer with me. I'm chief marketing officer of a software development consulting firm out in Fort Washington called Chariot Solutions. And because of that work, I started a nonprofit to get more middle school girls and hopefully into high school into technology, because I'm tired of working with 50 men all the time. So I'm a wife and a mother of two boys. I once worked in the retail industry, and QVC was my last run in retail. My road is curvy and different, and if you had asked me when I was your age where I was going to be, it was not here on this stage talking to you. So thanks for taking the time out of your schedule to listen.
So, Tracy, going off of what you just mentioned, and we had spoken earlier that you initially thought you wanted to pursue a career in fashion and retail, and that's where you had started. So I'd love to hear more about kind of what you thought you wanted to do, how you kind of started down that path, and when things changed.
Yeah. So I started working in retail as soon as I could get my work papers. So 16, I was working at a now defunct retailer called Close to You. And then I went to work at another defunct retailer called Nanduskin, and then another defunct retailer called, maybe I'm a bad person, QVC's still here, Strawbridge and Clothier. So at Strawbridge's, what I was really beginning to see, and I had gone to Drexel, gone through the co-op program, I love fashion, but what I was finding, it was very constrictive and restrictive. You had to follow a certain path, and I was finding my voice a little bit more by the time from high school into college. QVC was just really a little past its infancy. I'm dating myself, but that opportunity opened and went there and found that it was even more restrictive. Very structured, you had to do things a certain way, and apparently I became anti-establishment, which I did not realize that I had that in me. Left the industry and went into sales. Now, little known fact, I'm an introvert. This is sales, speaking, this is going networking, this is a push for me. It's a lot easier that I've been doing it, but, I'm nervous up here, just so you know. But sales allowed me to become more of who I was, allowed me to grow. From there, I wound up, I was 7 months pregnant with my second child. We bought a company and became an entrepreneur by accident. We ran that company for about 3 years. It was the scariest thing I'd ever done in my life. I talked to my husband kept his job, and we talk about it now. And we had two things came out of that. Three. One, we know that we will always be married, because that was like the toughest thing on our marriage. Two, we came up with a saying, which was, if no one's dead or no one's bleeding, it's not an emergency. So it's like putting the priorities in our life, and we go back to that every now and then. But the third most important thing that I found out about myself was that I was fearless. I may not have succeeded, but I dug down and did something that was so out of character, and that propelled me to take more chances, to believe in myself and my abilities. And from there, I just stumbled again. And things don't always, life happens. I mean, what is that saying that I'm totally forgetting? Life happens while you're making plans, I think. Mm-hmm. I ran into this group. We sold the business, and I ran into this group of people who were running a company literally down my street. And they were doing software. They were creating a software product. That business morphed into this business that we started 15 years ago. So I'm a founding member of this company that's 11 million plus, with employing 60 people, in an industry that I never thought that I would be in. And from there, also have been very active in the Philadelphia tech community, Philadelphia business community, and then finally finding a bigger voice for myself, advocating for girls and women in tech. And you know, it's been an amazing journey and experience, and I'm not done yet. So your journey starts soon. It doesn't end unless you allow it to. So that's it. Sorry, I went a little long.
Wonderful. And so Robin, kind of going back to the beginning of your career, or really even before that, I know you've spoken about how growing up, you didn't see people that looked like you reflected in mainstream media. So, you know, talk to us about that. How did that kind of affect you even at a young age, and how did that go on to impact the types of roles that you ended up pursuing?
Well, you know, I'm Mexican-American, proudly Latina, and I grew up in Texas, which is actually, my town is San Antonio, Texas, so there's a majority of Latinos in that country, in that area, but still, when you grow up, you know, it didn't match, like, the people that I would see around me that were, we had, like, a Latino mayor and, you know, like, you know, beauty pageants and, you know, people that run successful businesses, but it wasn't always commensurate to what I would see in media or on TV. You know, a lot of times when I would look at TV or I would look in magazines, I didn't see myself, right? I just didn't see myself. I didn't see a woman of color. A lot of times there were stereotypes of Latinas, like somebody that was a maid or somebody that was, you know, these kind, you know, are like overly sexualized. I graduated from college at the University of Texas, and I didn't know necessarily, I got a degree in communications, and I didn't know what I want to do. And I think that happens when you guys are young, because you have so much in front of you. I was like, I want to be a lawyer. I want to go into politics. I want to do communications. I want to be a writer. And so I kind of didn't know what I wanted to do. And I went to the bookstore at the university, and I saw an issue of Latina magazine. And I think it had J-Lo on the cover. And I was like, oh my God, that speaks to me, because I love beauty, I love fashion, but I also love my community. And I don't think they have to be compartmentalized. And I think back then you would see, you know, say like Vogue or Glamour, but you would only kind of see just white women. You didn't see women of color. And that didn't make sense to me. And I also love my community. And so I wanted to be able to blend both. And at the magazine, it blended both, because it had beauty and fashion, but it had politics and it had inspiring Latinas. And I was like, that's where I'm going to work. So I looked at the back of the magazine. I was in Austin, Texas. I looked at the back of the magazine, and it said it was based in New York. And my sister had just moved to New York, luckily, to go to fashion school. And so I called her and said, well, I'm moving to New York. And I literally bought a ticket. I didn't have a job. I was squatting on my sister's floor. And I went there with a single intention to get a job at this magazine, because that's what my heart said. This is about, you know, your heart guiding you, maybe not always, maybe your head, right? And so I got to New York, I made a resume, and I walked it to the office because I didn't have anything to do. And so I went to the office, and they let me up to like the 34th floor. And all of a sudden I was walking into the office as a Latina magazine, and I was like, can I have a job? And they looked at me, and I think they were trying to like escort me out, like, who let this crazy lady in here? But then they looked down, and they looked at my cover letter, and they said, actually, this is really well-written. Do you have a moment? And I was like, well, I have like 10. I've got all the time in the world. And so they said, can you come into the conference room? And they said, this is really crazy, but somebody just quit. Can you start on Monday? And I was like, yes. And it still gives me chills, because it was one of the best things that ever happened to me in my entire life. I literally saw something and I went for it. And it really spoke to me. And I think a lot of times what happens is that we have practical goals, and those are important. You know, those are very important. But you also have like your intuition that says, I can do that. I can totally do that thing. And I think that, you know, maybe something inspired that in people, and that's what inspired that in me. So it was amazing. It's kind of crazy. I left Latina to work at I wanted to do different things, obviously, and have a bigger career. So I've written several books, and I've been on TV, and we can talk about that later. But I had another sort of trust my gut moment because I actually, after I had my kids, I got cold from Latina and said, do you want to come back and work with us? And this was 2 years ago. And I haven't worked, you know, many years have passed since my first, you know, time there. And I said, sure, why not? I love Latina. And very quickly, I have become the president. And it's amazing. It's an amazing story. If I knew that that girl in the bookstore looking at that magazine would be a president of the company, I never would have imagined it. So I'm only saying this to you guys, which I get so emotional about it, but it's just about, you know what you want to do, and you have the capabilities of doing it. So please, please do it, because we need y'all.
And Becky, I think, you know, one kind of idea or conception that people often have is that success and, you know, accomplishing things has to be kind of a linear path. Mm-hmm. But I know you've mentioned this idea that sometimes you need to actually take a step back in order to go forward. So, mm-hmm. you know, what do you mean by that? How has that happened to you? And, you know, how do you know whether taking a step back is just kind of the bad kind of taking a step back or one that is going to propel you forward?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think if I think back on my career, there have been a couple of times where I've made purposeful steps mm-hmm. back. And that, as long, you know, as a purposeful kind of thought and point of reflection can be really meaningful. I do think that sometimes if I, you know, think about this audience and I think about where I was at the time that I was in high school or in college, there's a lot of what you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. So you're supposed to get a certain score on this test, or you're supposed to apply for a certain number of colleges, you're supposed to get the best internship, and all of those supposedly are going to ultimately, you know, find you success. And I think for a lot of people that works. But I also think that knowing what your own path is even more meaningful, and understanding what that is for yourself. I didn't have, like, I was, my confidence, I would say, entering the workforce was really shook by all of those supposed tos. And it wasn't until I had and made some very purposeful decisions, which sometimes were a step back, because I was basing them on what I felt I wanted to do or what my intuition was screaming, you know, whatever that may be. When I was, before I worked for QVC, I worked for a consulting firm. And while I was at that consulting firm, I kind of did one of those step backs. I was working in an internal role and really kind of was uninspired by the work and saw something different in the consulting line of business and went against that. And as I was making that choice, you know, in some of these consulting firms, their college recruiting is like a machine. And the way, you know, people work through some of those firms is, you know, you're at a certain level for a certain amount of time and then you get promoted to the next one and the next one. And I couldn't really connect to that. But as I moved into the consulting line of business, I was older than everyone else. I was with a bunch of bright-eyed new college grads, and it was a demotion for me to transfer, even though I'd been working for a number of years. But I thought it was really important to me. Two things I always ask myself: am I going to be challenged? And am I going to learn and grow from this? If I can answer yes to both of those questions, then I know I'm on my right path. And as I made that, it was totally against the grain I kind of messed up their whole system in terms of what they were expecting. And then when I made the choice to move on to QVC, I was in a similar spot. I'd been, you know, searching for something different. I'd pursued a career or a master's degree in counseling psychology and thought I was going to become a therapist and have an office out of the back of my house. I was on a totally different path. And I had been dropping a number of resumes at different job boards, and I got a call from QVC, which ended up being a really important call for me. And at the time, even though I was pursuing this master's, I also needed to keep working. I was a new mother. And I had two options in front of me, and one was this position at QVC, and one was to take an internal role in consulting. I was just coming back from maternity leave. I'd had my first child. They wanted me to go on an assignment that had me traveling all over the United States, which was not ideal as a new mother. This internal option at the consulting firm would have let me work from home, kind of keep my pay, stay on a management track that I was there. QVC was a different option. It was somewhat of a step back. It was less money. I would be walking away from management responsibility at that time in my career, but there was just something in my gut that was screaming that this was the right path. And a funny story I'll share about it is, I remember a couple weeks before starting at QVC, having one of those moments in the shower, like those moments of panic where some thought just crosses your mind. I got running out of the shower, ran downstairs, and I emailed my manager, my to-be manager. And I wanted to make sure that my email address was going to be BeckyO'Loughlin@QVC.com and not RebeccaO'Loughlin@QVC.com. And it just came to me in the shower that day, and what I ended up realizing, I'd spent the first 10 years of my career as Rebecca O'Loughlin because I thought I needed to be somebody other than myself. And by making that, in that reflection moment and making that email and request, I realized that I was starting on a path where I knew I could be my best self. If you know your path, if you're following your own path, you know that your best self will come out, and that's the best gift that you can give to yourself.
Fantastic. And Robin, you know, as you touched on earlier, you were at Latina, kind of your dream employer, and then you actually, left there to pursue books and pursue TV. So, how did you evaluate kind of what kind of projects to take on? How did you decide how to go after all those different things, and how did you think through those decisions?
You know, what happened is I was at Latina for a few years, and then I think what happens organically is that you sort of just grow, right? You evolve, and I wanted a different challenge, and I thought that was great. You ask yourself those questions. Like, I don't think I was that reflective at that time. I just knew that I wanted to do something different. I had been writing, and I was a magazine editor, and it was great because I started literally at the bottom, and I got to be bigger, and I just felt like it was time to grow. And so I think instinctually, again, it was just sort of this thing where I just kind of was getting bored. I was looking at other opportunities. And I had always wanted to be on TV. I had always, when I was in college, I had taken broadcast journalism classes, and I thought to myself, this is like before like YouTube so easily, like readily available, and you could just do it. So this is when people had to actually let you on TV. Now it's great because you could just put on your phone and you're like, I'm a superstar, right? It's like, this is the Robin channel. So before, this is when people had to like let you on TV. But I just had this instinct that it would be something that I liked to do. But again, it was one of these things where, you have that voice in your head that's like, why do you want to do that? Who do you think you are? Like, I have this one voice that always goes, who do you think you are? And I constantly have to be like, be quiet. And it doesn't really go away, but I just sort of like, I'm like, you're annoying me. But it's constantly, it was like, who do you think you are? Like, you can't do that. Like, people are going to make fun of you. You're going to be terrible. But despite that, those voices, I was like, I think a bigger voice said, no, I think you can do this. And it just kept coming. I think the voices, they don't stop, right? The one that I think is important. And so I was at a magazine, but I had a friend that worked at the news at the 5 o'clock in the morning channel. And he was like, actually, we're always looking for editors to come talk about their stories. Would you want to do that? And I was like, yes. And so I did, and I started just going on and talking about my, girlfriend getaways, or wear your eyeliner this way, or these are the fashions. And I loved it. Like, I immediately was like, this just feels so right. And literally within 2 months, the Today Show called, which is a huge morning show, and was like, we're looking for new people to come on. And so literally the first time I went on TV ever was, I think, in September. And by December, I had 2 segments booked on the Today Show. And so I think, when I talk about it, it sounds so easy, right? Like, I just did it. But I think what happens really is that there's a combination of saying yes to things and trying things, even though you're absolutely terrified, because I think those yeses, they lead somewhere. Mm-hmm. You don't know where it's going to necessarily go, but you know you're going to go. And I think that's really important.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And Tracy, I feel like that's a theme that's kind of been throughout your career as well, of kind of saying yes to things that are, scary or challenging, whether starting a company, you're going into sales, or joining this new company from the ground up. So, I'd love to hear you speak to that.
Wow. Okay. So, I think the last 2 years for me have been even, in the last year, have been me being pushed by other people. So, sometimes I didn't realize that I was, like I said, things just sort of happen. I believe there are no overnight successes. Things get put in your path. It's how you choose to take them. Looking back now of, this person who's here versus 20 years ago, understanding risk a little bit, so you get an idea of, okay, what's the worst thing that can happen if I go down this path? And knowing how much sometimes it is like a little bit like gambling. So do you understand what you can lose? And do you understand what you can gain? And I think sometimes we don't think about that. We may always jump in. Sometimes we don't jump in because we're so afraid. So, you know, while you're here, maybe think about something that you didn't do, because whether it's personal or school, something that you didn't do because you thought you couldn't, you didn't know how, somebody told you you couldn't do it, and that stopped you, or you thought the risk was too big. There's so many lessons, but I think the biggest lesson I have learned is that failure is not failing. I've learned my best lessons from failing. My business was not a success when I went off on my own. And it took me a while to understand that it was okay that I didn't succeed, that I'd done something that most people hadn't done, that I took this risk. It scared me tremendously. But I wouldn't be here if I hadn't taken that risk. Maybe I would have thought a little bit more about some things and done some things differently. But I think that I hope that answers your question. Mm-hmm. There's a point of fear that, as women, I feel, because I talk to a lot of women in what I do, and girls, and it's very similar. We stop ourselves. We think we need to be perfect. We don't have to be. So think about that as you leave here, as you hear these other speakers, because if that's one thing that you take away today, is that you do something that scares you a little bit, because that risk may lead to a door that you didn't think would be open for you.
And Tracy, I really like, you know, what you just said about kind of your way of evaluating whether to take a risk, of thinking through, you know, okay, what is the worst case scenario that could happen if, you know, I choose to make this decision. So Robin and Becky, I'd love to hear if you have a similar kind of thought process Tracy's thought process is, okay, what is the worst thing that could happen, and is it really that bad? Mm-hmm. How do you think about those kinds of decisions?
Go ahead.
You know, I think just playing off what you said, you know, I have this quote I say all the time, which is like, if you ain't failing, you ain't trying, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like we, you know, whenever you look at a new endeavor, a new project to take on, I mean, it could be anything. It could be a volunteering at your school, anything that takes your time, right? You know, it's like, where does your energy go? Where does your time go? And so I usually evaluate if I have enough time to do it. And if I really want to do it, and then am I scared to do it? Mm-hmm. I think usually it comes in. But I think, you know, I think for anything worth doing, it like we said, it's sort of like nerve-wracking. Mm-hmm. And I think it's okay completely, you know, to fail, and, you know, you'll be fine. The woman that's a CEO of Spanx, I think it's her name, Sarah Blakely. Yeah. She said, I read the story once, and she said her dad every day would tell her, okay, did you fail today? What did you fail at? Because if you're not failing, you're not trying. And I think it's the trying. I think we focus so much on the consequence of an action. Like, is this going to work? What's going to happen here? Does it make sense? Like, mm-hmm. Will this be a huge success? And if you don't, if I'm not going to be a huge success, I don't want to undertake it. But it's not really about the end goal. It's about the trying, the effort, because you don't know where that's going to lead. Like, you know, the examples I gave of working at the magazine or on TV, those had very successful end goals. There's been other endeavors that I've taken on that have not worked out so well, but they have led me somewhere, and I've met someone, and you have to just follow your path. You know what I mean? You have to follow your instinct and your path, because you don't know where you're going to go. And like, you know, Steve Jobs said, you know, kind of later on, you can connect the dots of That's your right. life yeah. And see, like, wow, if I hadn't have done that, maybe it didn't quite work that out that way. You know, just say you moved to California to follow a boyfriend, and you break up with a boyfriend, but then you meet the love of your life. So I think it's the following and the willingness to try being bigger than the fear of failure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I would just add to that, you know, for me, you know, I'm trying to think, I don't think I've ever and this is odd because I look back at myself, my younger self, and I know I didn't feel the confidence, mm-hmm. but I was making decisions as if I had confidence, which is interesting. But I've always asked myself, am I going to learn and grow from this, and is this going to be challenging? If I can answer that, if I can answer yes to those, then I don't let myself think about the risk. I don't let myself think about the, you know, what if or the failing. And I just, you know, in that, you don't always know what the end result is going to be or what your learning is going to be or what your takeaway is going to be or where it's, any choice or decision is necessarily going to take you. And that can be really uncomfortable. And I have often talked about how if you are feeling uncomfortable, you're doing something really, really right. Because being uncomfortable signifies growth. And if you're growing, then you're building confidence. And if you're building confidence, then you're building resiliency. And in whatever your path may be, if you have that confidence and you have that resiliency, you'll be able to, you know, make those decisions, whether it's a step back. And sometimes it's not a step back, sometimes it's a setback, which is a failure. You know, you didn't get the job that you wanted, or you didn't get you know, the raise that you wanted, or you didn't get into the school that you wanted, or you didn't do as well on whatever test it may be. And in all those moments, if you can just stop and reflect and really evaluate for yourself and be honest with yourself, could I have done something different? Could I have, you know, gone at this a different way? And have that opportunity of self-reflection and be really brutally honest with yourself, you'll move forward and figure out wherever it is that you're meant to follow next. Mm-hmm.
I do want to put my mom hat on and say, so this is the mom me talking, which is risk and danger don't, that's a no-no. So if it's going to be dangerous, don't do it.
Yes.
Little word of warning.
Fair. Okay. Good clarification. And one thing that what you've all just said really reminds me of, which is kind of something that my parents always said to me and that I keep in mind, is this idea that when one door closes, another door opens. That, you know, I feel like throughout my life, whether it was something, you know, in school or in my career or in my personal life, where there's some kind of huge letdown or failure or setback that you were so upset about at the time, there is always some point later on in the future where you end up actually being glad that that thing happened, even though in the moment it's almost impossible to think that you could ever be happy that, you know, whatever went wrong. You always end up feeling that way later on, which I think is good to keep in mind, whether it's, you know, applying for a job or applying for college and you were so upset in that moment. At some point, you're going to be like, I'm actually glad that happened, mm-hmm. which is kind of crazy. And so, Tracy, I'd love, you know, you've touched a little bit on about your nonprofit, Tech Girls, but I'd love to hear a little bit more about that because that is, you know, so relevant to everyone here.
So I call Tech Girls my third child. so this started, we started 8 years ago. We're headed into our seventh year. Something I'm really proud of, just like my other two children. So working in the tech industry, coming from retail and sales, which was very, you know, mixed in terms of who I was working with, getting into tech and really, I'm still for the most part, in fact, I was at a meeting yesterday. I was the only woman there. That's my life. This is opposite day for me. Like, this is awesome. I've been saying, great shoes, great handbag, great jewelry, so it's been a lot of fun. But that's not why I started Tech Girls. What bothers me is the lack of women that I see coming into the field. And it hasn't changed. I mean, it's 15 years of being a Chariot. We're doing some hardcore back-end development, not seeing women come through. There is flexibility in our schedules. I work with some really amazingly bright people. It's collaborative, it's creative, it's everything that the media portrays technology not to be. And now technology touches almost every industry that we're in. It's a 21st into the 22nd century skill set. And if I told you some of the money that's being paid right now, you might think a little bit differently. But just know that in some cases, some software developers are getting paid more than lawyers, getting paid more than doctors, getting paid more than people on Wall Street. So just put that aside for a second. After doing some research, understanding what was happening, why were women not coming into the field, there were two studies that were done that showed that at ninth grade, girls were self-selecting out of tech careers. And there's multitudes of reasons, and that's a whole other talk. But I was at a point in my life where I said, I'm gonna try this. What's the worst that'll happen? I tried and I failed, and I'll have a story. And it's 8 years later, and what we've done is we've created an organization that's worked with close to 10,000 girls in close to 40 states. We have a methodology that we put forward. We talk to, you know, we're running this like a business, not like a traditional nonprofit. And what we do is we create short interactive workshops that anybody can teach. In fact, we have high schoolers who have taught middle schoolers. So how awesome is that? So if anybody's really interested, go to techgirls.org and you can be part of the solution. And that's something that's really important to me, is being part of a solution, not being part of a problem. The other genesis of why I started it was because 8 years ago, we had a lot of people, women particularly, who were complaining about the situation but offered no solutions. And that was really important to me. We run, it's very positive. It's not just about women, it's about men, because we're not living in Wonder Woman's Island. We have to work with men, and there are men out there that actually are supportive, and they wanna work with you, and you have to understand that that is a side of the coin. So Tech Girls, I thought that I was doing some good for some people, but it's actually done more for me from a professional standpoint, from a growth standpoint. And I'll just talk just a tiny little story about risk and reward on a very small scale. So I'm applying, I have to finish this up, but for the Obama Foundation. There's a fellows program. Michelle, if you're out there, I'm applying. There's 20 spots. I mean, the idea that I'm gonna get picked is slim to none. And old Tracy would have said no. But I have something to say, and I'm deserving of it. So I've gone through the risk and the reward. It's, you know, it's time. And is my time worth it? I would have stopped myself before. And before Tech Girls, I never would have thought that I was deserving of that. So, you know, anyway, the idea is from this, we're hoping to showcase how girls are moving, not just from middle school, but into high school, into college, into first year, that we're all working as collaborative. And if you know, want to talk about a career in tech, you know, please come talk to me after.
Awesome. And so before we open it up to questions for the audience, I'd love to have you each tell us, you know, if you could tell your high school self one thing, what would it be? Whoever is
just
ready
one?
First. As many as you want,
so
within
many
reason.
So many things.
I would say, it's gonna sound right, but I wish I would have been a little bit more entitled. I think a lot of times, you know, women, and I don't want to make generalizations, and I hope y'all are, you know, millennials are different, but, you know, I think a lot of times women, and I think especially women of color, we can hold ourselves back because we can't always, there's not always images of, like, you know, CEOs and board members and presidents and technology. And when I grew up, you know, my family didn't, you know, we were pretty working class people. So I'm so proud of where I am. But I think that I could have gone for more things, but I think I had that, like, I just couldn't, you know, it's like, if you can't see it, sometimes you can't be it. And I just didn't see it enough. And that's why I work so hard what I do. And I've done, you know, obviously I work, you know, at the magazine and the website, but with books and TV, and the through line of all my work has always been to inspire Latinas to really show themselves that they can do anything that they want, and to show images, not just say it, but show stories, shine a light on women that are doing it and connecting the dots. And so I think that's the advice, is that, in not like a cheesy way, but you can literally do anything that you want and dream bigger than you can imagine. Like, I think even Oprah never imagined she was gonna be Oprah, you know, honestly. Like, no, she was just like, I just wanna be a girl that does TV. Like, the universe has so much bigger things for you out there. So just go for it, because it's just waiting for you.
Yeah, I would say very similar. My mom, when I was growing up, would say, oh, you have so many opportunities ahead of you. When I was growing up, it seemed like the only options were, you know, to be a nurse or a teacher. And so even the fact that she said that, it was like the best thing for me to hear over and over. But I wish I really understood what she meant, because I was like, oh, well, I can be more than a nurse or a teacher. And so that could be a multitude of things, but I wished that I had broadened my horizon. I mean, the fact that you're all here and sitting in this room and listening to all these amazing speakers, you're already doing that. But to really understand the world and the world that's out there, and I wish at a much younger age I had more actively done that.
So I'm going to go with my shirt theme, because we only have one. Girls support each other. Mm-hmm. If you're hanging around with people who don't support you, who talk you down, who say you can't, however, get them out of your life. Seriously. Like, I think back. One of my really good friends, who I met through the work that I do, it's probably about 15 years at this point, she wrote me this note. She's a very strong person, and she's like, I never really had close friends because other women didn't get me. And I'm like, strong women, bring them on. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really, really, really important. Support each other. Mm-hmm. You'll hear some things about networking and extend your networks, and always be good to each other. Because we have to work together. And I think part of why I've moved where I've moved is by getting rid of those people out of my life and putting people in my life and surrounding myself with people who are supportive, who are positive, who have my back when things don't go well. So that's what I would tell Tracy at 17.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Awesome. Great.
So now I'd love to open it up to questions from the audience. So you can direct your question at everyone here or at one particular person. And nothing is off the table. We're happy to answer anything at all. So raise your hand, and we have a mic there.
Hi there. Thank you so much for your wonderful insight. It has been a pleasure to listen to you. I am also older than some of the younger folks in the room. But I want to speak to them around some of the obstacles. I know Shonda mentioned that she does not believe in naming them obstacles. There are many challenges that these young ladies will face as they continue to pursue their own dreams, their passions in the area that they believe that they have a sense of purpose. My question becomes, Tech Girls, you actually prompted me to think about something. I have 5 or 6 friends who are in the tech space who are incredibly dissatisfied with their level of contribution, that their voice does matter. They are in a space where not only is it male-dominated in terms of their presence, but also their ideas propelling forward. They feel a bit discouraged. They get to a certain point and they plateau, they fall back. Beyond management, there's a shrinkage. And those who do stay to a certain point find that their voice not only is muted, but ridiculed, their ideas ridiculed. What do we do to help either muster the courage in these young women to keep them going so that they continue to propel beyond certain management level and to encourage the next generation? For example, your tech girls that you're getting excited about tech, when they enter this space, they are going to be bombarded with messages that tell them they're not enough, they're not good enough, they're not smart enough, that idea is stupid, you should think twice about this. Talk to that.
Yeah. Welcome to my world.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I say is that this is, it is not a sprint, it is a marathon, it's a generational change. There's a lot that's got to change. So one of the things, you know, dirty little secret, I'm not technical. I'm a technologist, but I am not a coder. So, you know, I need to have more women who are in the technology field up and speaking and out there and representing. That's one thing. Two, I need to be out there talking about cultural shifts, corporations that are doing it well. I think that's important. Three, I'm creating a generation, hopefully, that will be taking over the world. So if I get enough in, we're just going to flood the market. But what we say, because we run a conference called the Women in Tech Summit, and we hear this a lot. What I would say back to them is, right now, the value of being a woman in tech and being a woman who can do tech, we need to value ourselves and move to another company that values your contributions, not just based on your gender or race or whatever, but values you as a person and what you bring in. A lot of times, women, we feel we have to, you know, wait our turn, be in line, and sometimes we need to get out of line and think about ourselves and what's best for us. Example, a friend of mine, she got turned down for a promotion, and she was really upset, and she should have gotten this promotion, and she's in tech. And she was talking about, like, the company and how, well, she couldn't leave because things wouldn't go well at the company. And I said, the company just told you what they think of you. Why are you thinking about them?
Nice.
Mm-hmm. And she's now two pay grades up, uh-huh, working at another company that appreciates what she's doing. So we have to go out. You need to be loyal, but then there's a point where you have to think about what's best for you. So that's one thing that I would say.
Hi, thank you so much, Flavia Colgan with the Colgan Foundation, here with the Hallahan School for Girls. I love your t-shirt, by the way. I agree, girls do support girls. I wanted to ask you guys a question because we care deeply about mentorship, as I know Evalor House does as well. But my question is, how do you know when to trust your own instincts versus asking for advice?
I think you can do both.
Yeah.
I think you can do. I think a lot of times, I think it's normal to seek counsel, right? To seek counsel, like talk to your family, talk to your tribe, and get feedback, which is good, because sometimes you, and sometimes you're sounding it out. It's not, you're just not in your head. You're actually, it helps you express what you want. But I think inevitably what I do is I take all like the wisdom and the counsel, and then I process it and I apply it to see if it works for me. Because everybody's different, you know what I mean? Like your experience, all of our experiences are super like intertwined and similar, but really different. I have my own personal trajectory. So I have to see if that makes sense for Robin. So I absolutely, you know, I look to people and, you know, mentorship, we could, you know, have a whole panel around that. That's mm-hmm. so important. I think especially from girls of color that maybe just don't always see, you know, themselves out there. But I think inevitably you have to filter it through your own wants and instincts.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think that it's, for me, it's my intuition and my instinct first. But on the mentorship side, or, you know, kind of checking in with friends, know who you go to for what.
Yeah.
So every, you know, it's a, you say tribe. When I think of tribe, it's, you have to have, it's not just one mentor. Mm-hmm. Like having a mentor that gets assigned to you maybe in some way is wonderful, but create a sea of mentors around you, because everyone is going to have a different perspective and everyone's going to play into something different for you that might help you piece together your own path, what you need for yourself. But ultimately, it is your path, so it has to start and stop with you, no matter how many people that you may, and there's going to be people that you trust and love and look to for things all the time that may tell you something that just does not connect with you. And if it's not connecting with you, that's your sign that there's something not right about this and I need to pursue a different path or a different mentor or follow a different way.
We actually call it a personal board. So usually what we say to women is at a certain age, a personal board should not include your parents, because sometimes their interest in what you do is a little clouded, but that's up to you. But that personal board is going to help you. As I said, it's your tribe, but it's good to have those people who have your best interests at heart, who are going to push you beyond your capability, what you think your capabilities are going to pose questions to you. You know, at this age, I guess, you know, a teacher Maybe you ask other people. And a personal board doesn't have to meet quarterly, like ad hoc meetings.
Great. Let's take more questions. Great.
Oh, hi. So I had a question about when you were our age and what outlets you really turned to when you were feeling doubtful or when you needed someone to talk to, or if you had any maybe after school programs or just any ways that you boosted your confidence and kind of found an outlet to help find yourself through difficult time of high school.
Mm-hmm. That's so great. You know, when I was, I think the mentorship thing, I think is really, it's really important. You know, when I was in high school, my father had passed away when I was young, and my mom has four daughters, so she's awesome, but she's busy. So I think it was really, I didn't feel like I always had a lot of home kind of guidance, and so I found a lot of help with, like, I was lucky I had, like, good high school counselors, and I've always had mentors. Like, if I look back at my life, there was always a specific time that someone opened a door for me, and, you know, maybe it was an angel, it was a person, but it was really super important. So I feel like if there's someone that you identify, or you don't even maybe know, but that you kind of, like, want to, like, have them sort of take you under the wing, I think people so much want to help. I think that everybody's heart wants to help. You know, people call me all the time, and I help as much as I can because I got a lot of help. And then I found out I was in organized like activities, and that helped me so much because I was in debate and I was in theater, and debate, they're the ones that actually like took me out of state for like, you know, like the first time, and you know, these, you know, I went skiing for the first time, which I don't think I normally would have, and they helped me like look at colleges because I didn't necessarily have parents. And so I think like my organized activities actually really helped. So I don't know if there's something that you're into, but I found a lot of confidence in doing something that I felt good at, because I felt like, okay, this feels like I'm good at this. It feels like home here. And I think sometimes, you know, you need a secondary home to build, you know, your skill set and your confidence.
This question is directed for all of you. How do you guys believe that you guys can get students to get connected to like the lesser known career paths? Because there's a lot of programs out there, but there's only such a limited supply for the amount of demand that we have for students. Because I know from my school that I go to and the program that I attend, Philadelphia Futures, there's a lot of students out there who are in need, but there's only so much space that there are available, and there's only so many time that people can donate and devote to students. So how do you guys think that we as students can get other students to learn about these careers and work in there?
That's a good question.
So I think one thing you can do is organize, you know, if you've got the desire to do something, organize some sort of career day. That takes a little bit more effort, but that may at least allow you to bring different career choices to a group. I know career days aren't that much fun, but you know, it is something. There's a couple of mentorship programs out there. Spark is one of them. I'm trying to think what else is out there. You can always run a Tech Girls program.
There's a school near you.
I'm just trying to figure out if there may be some website, which we'll have to see if we can see. But maybe there's an aggregator of opportunities that we're not aware of. There's a lot of stuff happening at the university levels that are trying to reach into high school because they actually need to find, you're their customers, remember, for college, so they're trying to entice you. So, you know, see what might be happening at the college level that are reaching to high school. That's just some thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Great, let's go over here.
Hi, so I think I'm too short.
We can hear you.
So you're talking about like your personal board and like having like a group of mentors instead of just one mentor. So who is your, this is for anyone, who is your group of, I guess, role models or whatever you want to call them, who's your group now?
That's a good one. So, I mean, I'm lucky because my board for Tech Girls, I consider as part of my personal board, but I also have a couple of women who are friends that I can go to for certain pieces of advice. And I have a couple, now, you have to understand, I work with all these men, and there is, no offense to the men out here, but there is sometimes a language difference between men and women. So I have to go and talk to a couple of them who know, like, my situation and where I'm at, and they do a check for me. I call it the crazy check, am I crazy? And they tell me. You also want to have people who are going to give it to you straight. Straight doesn't mean that it's harsh, but it's honest and real. I think that's really important, because if you're just having yes people around you, they're not doing you any good.
And it's what you'd expect it to be, right? It's the people you work with. It's people that you've made connections with. It's friends. It's relatives.
Yep.
But that board membership just changes and evolves constantly. So it's a great question, because what it is today may look different a month from now, depending on what is in front of you and you know what you're really trying to work through.
Yep. I wrote this article once called, like, My Five People That Ride With Me. And it was like one of them was like your ride or die. So that was just someone that just, like, thick or thin, they totally believe in you. You can say the craziest stuff and they're like, yeah, you got this. And I think everyone has one crazy person, then you're like, oh, I love you. And then someone that I think gives it to you straight, that's like, you know, that loves you, but is sort of like, it could be your mom or someone that's just a little bit trying to be a little bit more practical. And then I said, you know, someone, I think sometimes your people that you, I don't want to say enemy, but people that, like, you get jealous of in a way. I think it's sometimes jealousy, it's like it inspires you. Not in a bad, like, evil way, like I want to see them do bad, but it inspires you because it means they're doing something that I want to do. And I think sometimes that can evoke something within you. And I think then you can seek out people. Like right now I have a mentor that founded Latina, her name's Christy, and I found a new mentor and an amazing woman named Dolores Huerta, who's a Latina icon, and we've, you know, she's 87. And I was like, that lady's dropping knowledge, so I'm going to be hanging with her. And then I think sometimes people can inspire you that you don't know. And I think it's okay to have, like, secret mentors, like, you know, Shonda Rhimes. We don't really know each other, but you're my secret mentor. Like, Michelle Obama, like, in my head, we're best friends. And I totally...
In my head, too.
Right? Where is it? You know, you're my mentor. Like, Oprah, Brene Brown.
Yep.
I think that women can inspire you. And that's what's amazing about, like, really doing what you're supposed to do and shining a light. When you follow your dreams, you inspire a million other girls to do the same. And that's why it's so powerful. So that's usually who I try to ride with.
Can we take our picture? Do we have time?
Yeah, we're gonna do one more question, and then before everyone gets up from their seats, we're gonna do a mega selfie from the stage here. So one more question, but then don't get up, because we're gonna do a selfie. So let's go over here for the last question.
Hi, I just wanna start by saying I personally love career fairs. I think
okay. Sorry. Did not mean to diss career fair. Sorry about that.
That's right. So when you are following this big dream and you have people who support you, who give you, like, positive words, but it's like you're really the only one who understands it, and it's really just you, and your success is dependent on you staying motivated. Mm-hmm. How do you stay motivated?
You stay. I mean, you know what your passion is, and it, yeah. I mean, it's not easy. You know, there's times where you are picking yourself up off the ground, you're going to your board, and you have to take those kind of rock bottom moments and know that they're just part of the journey and part of your path. You know, I mean, sometimes, and I've had moments in my career where even the people that you think are there, like you're the one that's always got you, like sometimes they're not there either. And that can be really disappointing and can feel terrible. But if you know your passion and you know what you want to keep moving forward with, you have to pick yourself up during those times. And that has to be, you can get inspiration from anywhere if you're seeking it. And sometimes it's still hard to find.
I find that during those times where kind of there's no one around you and you're kind of feel like you're at rock bottom and there's just nothing is when I like to have certain mantras that I come back to, because you're kind of not able to inspire yourself at that point because you're just like in such a bad spot. But if you just have things that you can just turn to again and again, like I know for me, one of them is, you know, whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. When the going gets tough, the tough get going is something that my dad has always said to me. And then mind over matter. So I think having a few mantras that are just there waiting for you that you can turn to when there's just nothing else and you feel like you're at the bottom of a ditch mentally is for me what I can kind of cycle through in my mind to try to get back up out of it. So, okay, great. Well, let's first give our speakers a huge round of applause.